Mi nombre es Ilse, ando siempre metí mi radio sintonizada 99.5 FM WBAI.
What language do you speak when you call back home and talk to your grandmother or cousins? Join WBAI's ongoing community outreach and produce a station ID for us in your native tongue. You can contact the program coordinator, Michael G. Haskins, at wbaiannouncements@gmail.com. Let's honor each other.
And it's 1900 hours. You're listening to WBAI in Miami. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. From Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. From Billy Bomb.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. I'm told I made a mistake. It's WBAI New York. I was confused by the weather, which is insane for New York in January or February. It's the first day of February. Might as well be the first day of June for the way things are here. I think it's disgusting. Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I'm annoyed by this. I like winter. I like cold in the winter, not warmth.
That's good for you.
All right. You know, you have a snowstorm in June. That's the equivalent of what we're having right now. Okay. And I'll see how people react to that. Everyone's saying it's a beautiful day. No, it's not a beautiful day. There's something wrong when it's almost 70 degrees Fahrenheit in the middle of the winter. There's something wrong with that. Dotrit, yes. Good evening.
Hello. Well, to be fair, it is beautiful.
No,
but
it's not
supposed to be this
it's
time
not
of
beautiful.
Year.
Beautiful is cold in the winter. Beautiful is warm in the summer. You know, we can talk about this the whole hour. Jim, you're also here.
Hello.
How you doing? Bernie S. down there in Philadelphia.
Greetings from very warm Philadelphia.
You're getting it too, huh?
I like it.
Is this where I advise you to go to hell if you think it's too warm here?
Okay, you know, I've been through that. I went to hell twice, which is in Norway, and it gets cold there in the wintertime. I'll say that, and it's the sun stays out in the summertime. So, maybe I will go back to hell. Okay, we have a busy show tonight because, it's the first day of the Winter Fun Drive, and usually the Winter Fun Drive takes place when it's cold outside, so people are inside listening to the radio with their checkbooks open, hopefully, or their credit cards out on display, because you know that you have to call in quickly to take advantage of the amazing things that we offer. Tonight will not be an exception. We're not on next week. And I hope people call in and keep this place going because, boy, no matter what the temperature is outside, it's always amazing inside here at this radio station. It's a very unique place that exists in New York City that has existed since 1960, broadcasting off the top of the Empire State Building with all kinds of alternative ideas and thoughts. It's magical WBAI. And our pledge number is 212-209-2950 in case people are so inclined to already call in. But let's first look at some news items that have taken place this week. Then we'll get into our special guests for tonight. We're going to be talking about leaks and confidential things and controversy in general, I guess, and government reaction and making corporations angry and all those things that you couldn't talk about on any other radio station. Where shall we start? Well, there was this, speaking of chaos, which is what these actions often cause, there was chaos in the German parliament this week, and I really like this. I like the way this transpired. Listen to this Reuters story. The German parliament's email system was hampered for several hours for more than 4,000 staffers and deputies when hundreds of workers responded to an errant email sent by one staffer named Babette to all 4,032 coworkers. This reminds me of like the 1990s, where things like this happen all the time. The flood of emails began when Babette accidentally replied to all the Bundestag email list with a short answer to a colleague, which basically said, please bring me a copy of the new directory. Well, their exchange quickly multiplied when hundreds of colleagues responded with comments ranging from, please remove my name from your list, to, I'd like to take this opportunity to say hello to my mother. That's a bizarre way to respond to that
does
message.
Does the mother also work in the Bundestag?
I don't know why somebody would say that. I do know why people would say, please take remove my name from your list. And every time I get mass CC'd on things, there's always some joker someplace or some idiot someplace that responds to the entire list saying, stop emailing me, and emails everybody else to say that. Anyway, it was a rare moment of lighthearted confusion in a country with a reputation for doing things with precision. Many Germans working in the parliament remained uncharacteristically relaxed. One member of parliament for the Greens party, Volker Beck, said, one mistaken click and the parliament's email system is turned into a new social network. One anonymous staffer in the usually anonymous parliament building wrote, I think this is great. We should do this once a month. It'll help us grow together. A spokeswoman of the Bundestag confirmed that there had been a flood of emails in response to the errant email and that it was possible, as German media reported, that emails in the parliament were delayed for up to half an hour due to the high volume. I just think it's great occasionally to just have something like that happen and everybody sort of pause. It's like having a fire drill in the middle of school.
But what exactly happened? They have an email alias, I assume, that just goes to the entire staff. And someone sent an email to that alias, which has, I assume, existed all this time. This doesn't make any sense.
You want to dig for facts. You can dig all you want. But the important thing is that half an hour of time was wasted at least, and people had fun. And they went outside, I guess, and sort of hung out for a while. I don't know why they would go outside. Dot Red, then Bernie.
I just love that one person is actually able to start all this mayhem.
Babette, yes. Yeah. Well, we should interview her. Bernie, go ahead.
The best example that I can recall of an inadvertent mass CC emailing was when the MPAA or its legal counsel inadvertently CC'd all the defendants in a case. Do you recall that?
Was it our case?
Well, it was a whole bunch. Do you remember this? This is like a good 10 years ago. There was a case where a lot of people. It might not have been our case, but it was an MPAA related case for the whole DMCA thing.
Okay.
Where someone from the law firm that was against all these people for allegedly violating copyrights. There was a whole bunch of Jane Does or whatever. They had a bunch of email addresses. They just emailed everybody. This was discussed at like H2K or H2K.
It was probably Proskauer Rose, their attorneys.
Yes.
Right.
So that way all the defendants were suddenly had all each other's email addresses and they could all compare notes and get on the same page and it was great.
Ah, good fun. Okay, this other story that's somewhat more serious concerning Mega Upload, the site we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, the site in New Zealand that was shut down somehow by the U.S. government, and they're hoping to extradite.
What do you mean? Somehow they went in and seized the servers from the data hosting facility.
Yeah, well, somehow they got permission to do that.
That's the mystery.
Yeah, that's a big mystery. But that's what happens. Anyway, so all this data was seized, and the way the media would have you believe it, everything that was on Mega Upload was piracy, but it's not the case. There was all kinds of information up there because people were storing all sorts of data. Well, Mega Upload has received a letter from the U.S. attorney informing the company that data uploaded by its users may be destroyed within a matter of days. The looming wipeout is the result of Mega Upload's lack of funds to pay for the servers, and I guess having been rated as they were, they wouldn't have access to a whole lot of funds at the moment. Behind the scenes, Mega Upload is hoping to convince the U.S. government that it's in the best interest of everyone involved to allow users to access their data, at least temporarily. But when you think about it, there are all kinds of things that people have stored on this particular site. Archives of personal information, things that are completely legal, and to have it seized and then destroyed by a foreign government seems to me like not a good thing to do.
So there's actually a bit of good news, or at least potential good news in this. The big hosting provider, which is a company apparently called Carpathia, has teamed up with the EFF to... They created a website called Mega Retrieval, and you can go to megaretrieval.com. And they've promised to delay as long as possible destroying the data. So hopefully there will at least continue to be some chance of getting it back.
Why do they have to destroy it in the first place? It's on drives that don't belong to them. Why can't they just preserve it until
that's,
the case
that's
is
what
resolved?
They're going
to
do.
Okay, but I'm saying, why does the U.S. government say they need to destroy it in the first place? It doesn't make sense to
well,
me.
Well, I mean, so the drives are owned by Carpathia, which could, you know, use them for some other customer, but they've promised not to.
All right. Well, good, good. And a little pressure sometimes is
and
important.
And if you are one of the people who has your own content in Mega Upload and you can't get it out, you can go, again, on megaretrieval.com and you can email the EFF, which will try and help you.
Now, Bernie, this is a story that that you posted to our list, our off-the-hook list here, which, by the way, you can mail us, oth@2620.com, if you have a story or opinion that you'd like to share with everybody on the radio show. This has to do with Twitter and with travel, Twitter and travel at the same time. I cannot believe this story. This just blew me away. Two 20-somethings arriving from the UK learned a harsh lesson about the American government's sense of humor on January 23rd when they were detained and then forced to return home because of comments they made on Twitter. Lee Van Bryan and Emily Bunting were going through customs when they were detained. They spent the next 12 hours locked up in a cell being grilled by Homeland Security officials. Bryan was charged with intending to come to the U.S. to commit crimes, while Bunting was charged for traveling with him. I didn't know that was an offense, being charged with traveling with somebody. Paperwork for the incident indicates that Bryan's name was on a one-day lookout list maintained by Homeland Security. First, I'm hearing about a list like that. According to the New York Post and World News Daily, this refers to an auto-generated temporary list of inbound travelers that are already in the official Terror Watch list database. The paperwork also referred to Bryan's tweets, and they refer to them as tweeters. They can't even get the name of Twitter right. They call it tweeter. Now, from the official paperwork, during secondary examination, Mr. Bryan was placed under oath and his sworn statement was taken by CPP Officer Wahman. Mr. Bryan confirmed that he had posted on his Twitter website account that he was coming to the United States to dig up the grave of Marilyn Monroe. Also, the Twitter account of Mr. Bryan posted that he was coming to destroy America. The tweets had been sent a week before their trip, indicating the U.S. government had flagged the pair well before their arrival. Both claim the messages were lost in translation. And keep in mind, they came from the U.K., so they still managed to lose it in translation.
The translation was from English, the language that we and the people in the U.K. share, and whatever bizarre, perverted language the CBP speaks.
Kind of my point, yes. Now, they asked why we wanted to destroy America, and we tried to explain destroy meant to get trashed and party. That's sort of how I interpreted it when I read it the first time. Bryan also said he was asked about a tweet that he says is a quote from the television show Family Guy. Family Guy just keeps causing problems everywhere. 3 weeks today, we're totally in L.A., pissing people off on Hollywood Boulevard and digging Marilyn Monroe up. Now, apparently that's a quote from Family Guy, and everybody who has majored in English should know this. I almost burst out laughing when they asked me if I was going to be Lee's lookout while he dug up Marilyn Monroe, Bunting told the Daily Mail. It got even more ridiculous because the officials searched our suitcases and said they were looking for spades and shovels. But things quickly became less humorous to Bryan and Bunting. Speaking with the Daily Mail, Bryan said officials told him, "You really effed up with that tweet, boy," before handcuffing and putting him in what Bryan described as a cage inside of a van. He then was transported to a prison with other border offenders. It's just so ridiculous. It's almost funny, but at the time it was really scary. The Homeland Security agents were treating me like some kind of terrorist. We just wanted to have a good time on holiday. That was all Lee meant in his tweets. You know, all that notwithstanding, folks, I really hope people do come to the United States for the Hope Conference this summer. But man, how do you tell people that, you know, it's not that much to worry about when they're looking at your tweets from weeks ago, misinterpreting things that are written in the same language and just basically acting like real jerks. Now, Bernie, you posted this. What are your thoughts about it?
I think it's interesting that the Customs and Border Protection or the Department of Homeland Security is looking at apparently everybody's tweets, or has they have various filters and scanning tools to look for keywords like destroy and America and Marilyn Monroe, things like that, so that they would, you know, detain a couple of obviously innocent teenagers who are just having fun and joking.
Well, 20-somethings. Let's be real here.
Did I say teenagers?
Yeah, the 20-somethings, not teenagers. Yeah, significantly more dangerous.
Much more dangerous, you know, dangerous with every year. But it just seems so Orwellian that they have the resources to devote to this sort of nonsense.
Well, what if everybody visiting America tweeted that they were going to destroy America or dig up Marilyn Monroe or something else that would cause them concern? They would be so taxed. They'd have to hire all kinds of new people. The economy would benefit from the creation of new jobs. I think a lot of problems could be solved.
There's so many more serious things that are absurd with this story, but the thing that keeps getting me, they searched the bag for shovels. They didn't think you could buy shovels in L.A.? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, a lot doesn't add up here. And plus, I don't think you can bring shovels on an airplane. Can you?
Well, in your checked bags.
All right. Well,
I don't know why you would, because you're flying to L.A., which I understand has shovels for sale. But
yeah, well, maybe if they found the shovels, then they'd have the intent or whatever. I don't know. I can't get into the brains of these people. You'd need some kind of like microscope to do that. But who knows what they were thinking? Got right.
Yeah, I don't really think we can analyze this too deeply, because obviously whoever was in charge wasn't really thinking things through. But
that's the entire department, all right? Yeah. Every time I come into the country, I get interrogated. God knows what they're looking for. This is what they did. This is their MO. But the thing is, if you fight it, if you let people know what's going on, that's sort of maybe things will get corrected.
Well,
maybe.
Well, I agree that the whole department seems to be a little screwy. I mean, if this one-day watch list, if someone's dangerous where they're not supposed to be allowed in the country, how are they only dangerous for one day?
Well, maybe the mood will pass. Maybe they won't want to dig up Marilyn Monroe
anymore. So terrorism's now a 24-hour phase?
There's just so much we can learn from this, and so much that, you know, I'm sorry that their whole vacation was ruined.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, folks, I mean this. We do want lots of people to come from overseas, and we always get some pushback from people saying, I don't want to be fingerprinted. I don't want to have my picture taken. It's, you know, it sucks. It's horrible. What they put you through sometimes. But remember that you're amongst friends when you finally do arrive. You'll have an amazing story to tell and to share with a few thousand of your best friends. And if the worst happens and somehow you get sent back, well, we'll tell that story too, and we'll get some satisfaction for that. The thing is not to be cowed into submission and not to let the bad guys win, you know, not to let them scare you into not coming in the first place, not being a part of something that is something you want to do. Now, on the subject of hope, hope number 9, we have announced our first in a series of keynotes. And the people in this room know, I believe, but maybe the people on the radio don't. We are getting the Yes Men to be one. Yes, yes, Bernie. The Yes Men will be one of our keynote, two of our keynote speakers, but for one keynote address that will be taking place the weekend of July 13, 14, and 15. And boy, I cannot think of a more perfect match for hackers on planet Earth, because these guys are incredible hackers. They hack the system, they hack the media, and they do it in a very clever and positive way. Very briefly, they've impersonated people from the World Trade Organization, from Dow Chemical, from I think ExxonMobil, and basically what they do is they do it in such a way that it's believable that people who really don't think too hard about this trust them and allow them to speak on behalf of corporations they have absolutely nothing to do with. And once they do this, they actually speak intelligently, but they say things that make you think and make you realize that, wow, these corporations that they're supposedly speaking for really are kind of evil, like speaking for Dow Chemical and saying, yes, of course, we'll take responsibility for the horrible tragedy at Bhopal that killed thousands of people, thousands and thousands of people killed by a gas leak. Or a chemical leak, and of course the corporation has to take responsibility. But then the corporation has to go public and say, no, we're not going to take responsibility for that. We don't think we're liable. So what better way to get people to show their true colors and to impersonate them and make them seem like good guys? So they have to stand up and say, no, we're actually bad guys. That, to me, is genius, and that's why we asked them to be a part of it. And it's going to be a great talk. I think it'll inspire a lot of kids, a lot of hackers in general, to think of ways that they can be clever, change the world a bit, and educate people at the same time.
They've been at Hope before.
They have been at Hope before. But
they've become a bit more and more famous. Yeah.
They're really famous now. They've got two movies out. The whole world knows who these guys are. So we're pleased as punch to have them be part of Hope. Okay, but tonight we're pleased as punch to welcome two very special guests into our studio. We've been promoting this kind of mysteriously since last week, saying we're going to have someone on who's responsible for a lot of leaks. And believe it or not, there are people that have been doing this for quite some time. And it's my pleasure to welcome John Young from Cryptome and Deborah Natsios from Cartome, the affiliated side of Cryptome. Welcome to WBAI.
Good to be here.
So now, Cryptome.org, when did Cryptome actually start? It was a while ago, wasn't it?
1996, June of 96.
Wow. And what you guys have done is basically what has gotten a lot of publicity over the last couple of years in other ways. People give you, sensitive information, and you clean it up, make it presentable on the web, and is that pretty much how it works?
That's it in a nutshell. We don't clean it up. We just put it up. Whatever comes in,
I mean, make it formatted so that it actually—
Yeah, we format it and put it up. And that's the only reason the site was set up to do that.
So now, at what point did you decide this is something I'd like to do? This is something that needs to be done.
We were involved in a group called Cypherpunks.
Okay.
And there were people there that had information that they wanted delivered to the public without being identified as a source. So we offered to do that. We had the resources to do it and the time and some scanner material to scan hard copy, because most of this was in hard copy in those days. And so we said we would do that. And so people started sending us material, usually dealing with cryptography or communication security or intelligence or things like that. It was a fairly narrow focus, primarily around cryptography and communication security.
Now, do you remember what the first thing that you posted was? Or?
Yes, it was some encryption code that a cryptographer had access to on a confidential basis and wanted to make it public because he knew it was going to be used by corporations to get access to encrypted information that was going to come to the public, and he wanted to let this be known that it was coming because he was still under an NDA to not disclose it, but he knew that he'd be losing his job because the Cold War was winding down. And a number of these highly skilled cryptographers knew that they would be losing their jobs and wanted to know that this material, which once was restricted to the military, was going to become commercial. And commercial people would start exploiting it, and so they wanted to alert the public to what was coming. And so this was the great battle over encryption in the mid-90s, and we were fortunate to be around to help publish that material, most of which we did not understand, fortunately. So we were happily ignorant of what we were doing, and that was our defense, that we said we'll do it because we don't know any better, and let the public decide whether it should be out there or not. So we've never tried to editorialize material. We put it up and let the public decide what they want to think about it.
So you put that up back in the mid to late 90s. What was the initial reaction?
Well, people in the crypto field were quite happy, and they started sending more because they knew this was coming, and so they started sending us more material. But not long thereafter, we started getting a boat from NSA every day coming in to see what we were putting up. And it was called the NSA boat, or that's the title we gave it, because we traced the address, and it was from NSA was tracing this because, and so we published that information that because we learned to read logs and could see who was coming.
So you published the log of who was visiting you from the NSA.
That's right.
As another entry in Cryptome.
That's right. And so we tried to be as open as we could about how this was working, hoping that others would learn from it and start doing it, and they did, and others started doing this as well. And so we learn from others who were doing it, and it continued thereafter, so that we were sort of a test case of seeing what would happen. And so we weren't sure what would happen. We've had some visits from FBI several times and phone calls and stuff like that, but it turns out nothing we did was illegal. It was all done by chilling people's ambition to not do this, and so they used a number of chilling effects And we published all that and say, nothing has happened. They just showed up and talked, and we said, what's your basis for coming? And they said, well, you haven't done anything illegal, but it would be good if you didn't do this. And we said, thank you, and could we have your names, please? And so we published their names, and they said, please don't publish our names.
Publish their names.
And so we, because we said, this is part of the story. We think the public needs to know who you are. You're public servants, and we have a kind of a important role to get the full story out, not to say the FBI was here and we're going to disappear now. We wanted to say, no, actually, you can respond to these folks, because they were always very polite, but they knew how to drop these little hints that, as they said, you know, that would be good for the country if you didn't do this. And we said, and why not?
And that works with most people, right? Yeah, most people would buy right into that and say, okay, I want to be a good citizen.
That's right.
Have you ever had to remove anything from your site?
Well, a couple of times. But one of the interesting things is that there's been no reason to remove it. Nothing we did was illegal. But now we're going to get on to copyright issues. The only time we've ever removed anything was under threat of copyright. But in one case, we refused to remove, and our site was shut down for 12 hours. But then the Microsoft, who was the one that filed the DMCA complaint, withdrew it, saying, we did not intend to shut the site down. We just wanted them to remove one file. And so the DMCA backfired, and so they said, we withdraw our complaint, and so the site went back up.
Now, that must have been as a result of public outcry once your site was taken down.
Absolutely.
And where did that public outcry come from?
Well, it came from people who saw what had happened, because we, just before we were shut, we put up what had happened and published the DMCA notice, the notice from the ISP, and what the procedure was, and saying, this is what's going on, and a few hours later, the site was shut, because it's an automatic process. If you don't withdraw it, they shut it. So people knew what was coming, and so the public took it from there. And some stories were written, and a number of things were written, and we heard from people with inside Microsoft saying they were raising hell, too, so that this was overreaction, and that because there was no human intervention. Mm-hmm. That's the way the DMC is written. If you don't take it down, it's an automatic shutdown.
Yeah, that's what makes it so.
And that was their intent, not to have humans involved. But there is a response, and so we've now seen others take that approach, too.
Do you remember what the actual document was in that particular case?
Yeah, it was called the Microsoft Global Law Enforcement Guide, where they instructed law enforcement how to ask for information about Microsoft's customers, specifically who to talk to, how to phrase it, who to send it to, the entire procedures, and that was for global law enforcement.
Global law enforcement.
Yep.
This sounds so evil, and Microsoft Corporation, and
And we've since gotten several dozen of those, because all these online corporations have such guides now, and so we publish all that we get, and they're still popping up, usually hidden behind privacy policies.
Now, Deborah, I want to bring you into this now. You have a sort of a subsite off of Cryptome called Cartome.org, and I think that's less people know exactly what that's all about. And it's about map making technology, or
yeah, that's right. And it was active for it built up an archive over the course of a couple of years, and then it's gone on to sort of be an umbrella under which research projects have been transacted. So it's a kind of a think tank environment. But, you know, John Young and I are both trained architects. We're professional architects. And so our involvement in technology and in the politics of information really emerges from this kind of architectural environment that is information dense and rich. You know, architects just don't do glossy facades and design formally pleasing surfaces. They are coordinators of huge troves of information from all the consultants, from the technology consultants, structural, HVAC, mechanical, plumbing. And so it's this task of understanding that the built world comes out of this bed of information material that intrigued us in this projecting that interest into the new technologies and information milieu. And so Cartome projects off also from the architectural dimensions into more geographic and spatial interests, and therefore cartographic. So the scale of cartography being not so much 1/4 inch equals 1 foot of architectural scale, but projecting into global and globalization sorts of scales.
Wow.
And so our interest with that links into security issues, what with geographic information systems being powerful tools for sensing, reporting, tracking, and delineating risky populations, risky mobilities. They're very powerful tools for locating and demonizing, if you will, in a spatial sense.
So now, how controversial would the things that get posted in your particular part of the site, how does that compare to some of the things that on Krypton in general?
Well, I would say it's educational in a more straightforward way than the provocations of controversy, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of material to cover and it doesn't need the agitation of controversy to be engaging, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned.
But I still imagine it might be a bit sensitive for the authorities.
Well, it is, because the material is so dual use. It has the incredible military policing potential at the same time as others use it as tools for resisting or for activism. But in the policing and military domains, it's very provocative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add that Krypton started an eyeball series as a result of Deborah's work in the visual area, which has been quite controversial, where we started publishing satellite photos of sensitive sites before Google Maps was set up.
Of what sites?
Before Google Maps was set up.
What sites were you publishing?
Sensitive sites.
Oh, sensitive, okay.
Yeah, and because there were some popular commercial programs, one of them called MapQuest, that started making free satellite photos available. So we started looking for sensitive sites, mm-hmm. forts, all the military sites, intelligence sites, and started publishing those photos and describing what they were. Apparently, people didn't know that was readily available. So we got a lot of complaints about that. So that was a spring off of Deborah's cartel.
Interesting.
Work.
Wow. Well, I need to break in here just to let people know that we're speaking with the founders of Krypton.org and Cartome.org. John, how many, if you can even fathom, documents or releases have you had over the years since you started in the 90s?
Well, it's up to about 70,000 documents.
70,000 documents.
Yeah.
What we are offering tonight is the entire collection on 4 DVDs for a pledge of $75. A lot of sensitive information here, a lot of information that certain authority figures would rather you not have. All available to you, all instantly available on your computer on 4 DVDs for a pledge of $75. 212-209-2950. This is only being offered for this hour right now. And if you're really into the whole intelligence scene and all kinds of controversial talk about sensitive information and spying and U.S. government reaction to various things, you might want to consider our $125 package, which includes the entire Krypton archive and also about 25 talks that have taken place over the years at the HOPE conferences that have dealt with such issues. And it'll keep you busy for quite a while. 25 talks plus 4 solid DVDs filled with data, sensitive information, things that have been posted on Krypton.org over the years since the 1990s. 212-209-2950. Please give a call now. Show your support. Keep this kind of conversation going. Keep this radio station going, because you might not have ever heard about this before. You might have only heard the subject of leaking information framed in the context of the mass media. But how often do you actually get the chance to listen to the people that have worked in this field and hear their own words?
70,000 documents. So we say 40 DVDs, and it sounds like, you know, not that much. I could carry it in my hand, no problem. But 70,000 documents that you're not supposed to have. That's a lot.
If you read one document a day, well, no, you wouldn't be able to ever finish, I don't think. But it's a lot. It really is, and it's presented in a way that is very educational. I mean, I've looked at the site over the years, and it's not just documents though. I mean, you published something a few weeks ago, which I thought was fascinating. It was basically a list of all, pictures of telephones in the White House. And that really is a subject close to my heart because I love phones and I'm fascinated by the White House. But to see phones inside the White House and just to basically have an explanation ongoing as to, well, this is this particular type of phone, this is this phone system here, it's very well laid out so that you're not just getting data dumped on you, but there's actually something that shows you what it is that you're getting. And that's a part of this whole thing. Did you get much reaction to that particular?
Yeah, that was very popular. And it gives me a chance to say that, to pick up what Deborah's talking about, that our training as architects has been very helpful in how to handle information that comes from others and that we gather like this, which is to put it in a comprehensible form. And that we consider what we're doing educational in character, not controversial. And so that while we do leak material, it's a public education initiative is what we call it, because mm-hmm. we call ourselves public scholars rather than affiliated scholars. And so this is all in the educational field rather than the media field or the news field. So we do this in a very patient, thorough way and let people study this material on their own rather than us telling them what to think. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see this as a commercial product. We see it as an educational product.
But these days, education is controversial.
You
tell people things, and there are people that don't want that to be known, want to cover it with copyright legislation or various other Patriot Act nonsense.
Absolutely, or contain it within universities or other control forum.
Now, I think this is very important, and actually, here you have, just from what you've seen in the media, you'd think there's maybe very few players out in this field of getting sensitive information out to the masses, information that you might have a hard time aggregating on your own. Meanwhile, there's actually, there's more than just a few people that have controversy swirling around them. You have sites like Cryptome, which go back to the mid-90s mm-hmm. and have a very, very long history of information that you might not be, that you would have a very hard time finding elsewhere. And, I think it's great that they're here in the studio today and actually offering to the listeners four DVDs with 70,000.
I'm not sure if people are realizing the magnitude of this. This is something that's never been offered on our airwaves before, it's something that really is educational. Shows all kinds of things that are not in the public eye until they get into the hands of John Young. And Cryptome.org and released to the world, and people become educated as a result. This is all here for you to now have delivered to your house. 212-209-2950. We got two calls on the line right now. I know we have room for a lot more than that, we would like to see those phone calls come in.
Dutris was telling me earlier that he saw eight people in the pledge room,
eight people.
I don't know if they're all still there, but let's find out.
Make them busy.
Yeah, let's
212-209-2950.
We have room
for
at least another six calls to come in. And again, as I said, this is only being offered for this hour. $75, you get all the whole Cryptome archive, and for $125, you get that plus about 25 talks dealing with intelligence issues that have taken place at the Hackers on Planet Earth conferences, all eight of them since 1994.
You say hour, but really there's 23 minutes left in this hour.
Yeah, we got so caught up in talking about this, we kind of forgot to ask people to call in, and that's very important. That's essential, in fact. If we don't have people calling in to support the radio station doesn't exist anymore. It's as simple as that. That's how our bills get paid. 212-209-2950. Four calls on the line, so we only have four more to go to make sure everybody has a job down there. So
Emmanuel,
if you're out there, yes, Bernie, please. Yeah, you always can bring in another call, so go ahead.
I just wanted to thank John Young and Deborah Natsios for their work over the past, a decade and a half, for being the nation's archivists for sensitive government information that we're not supposed to see. I mean, this is a treasured public service, in my opinion. And it's obviously a labor of love. They don't do this for money. They're professional architects. They do this on their own time as volunteers. And these are some of the finest examples of American citizens I can think of. And I just want to thank them for doing this work for year after year under, all kinds of pressure from government agencies and corporations who yell and scream and pressure them and try to take their website off. Line. I mean, this is patriotism at its finest, in my opinion. And I encourage our listeners to
also become patriots and obtain this massive archive of 70,000 sensitive government documents. We never know. I mean, something could happen. God forbid something could happen to Cryptome again, and it just could never reappear. We've seen other websites mm-hmm. being taken down. I think it's critically important that our listeners and other people try to obtain local copies of this information. It's not guaranteed of staying online forever. I mean, I know John and Deborah will do everything they can, but I think it's critically important to have your own copy of this information. It will give you a much broader picture, sort of a bird's eye view of what your government is doing. I mean, there's a lot of really controversial...
Bernie, you haven't brought in another phone call yet. You got to give out that phone number.
I've got to say, if you want to become a patriot and obtain a copy of the 70,000 documents and 4 DVD-ROMs, call 212-209-2950. Not only will you be supporting this effort of John Young and Deborah Natsios, who are doing this incredible public service, but you're supporting a radio station that will promote this sort of activity. 212-209-2950. WBAI is the only radio station I know of that's going to promote this kind of activity, which is highly frowned upon by government agencies and major corporations that don't want us to see this information. This is really important stuff. 212-209-2950.
And the thing is, by having the DVDs in your possession, you have a degree of anonymity. You aren't being watched on the internet by somebody that sees you reading particular documents. And that's always a fear. It's always a threat that we have to contend with. When you have this information, and I'm going to give this call to you, Bern. I think this is your call that is coming in right now. Thank you for the person calling in. Actually, two people calling in. 212-209-2950. But by having it actually in your possession, you are free to do whatever you want with that. You can copy it and put it on different machines and just spread it around. That is the power of what people have when they have data. They can spread that around, spread the knowledge, keep it from being outlawed. And, I mean, that must be something that is in the back of your minds whenever something happens, whenever a new law is passed or whenever something is deemed controversial, that they could just go and erase it and make it like it never happened, very Orwellian. That right?
Well, I completely have to agree with what you're saying, Emmanuel, because I'm sure that there's many people who don't visit some of these websites because they're scared of how the authorities looking at their traffic might, you know...
Or they're blocked. They're blocked from work sites or
even
schools.
Or even worse, that they're not even allowed to see it at all. And here you have a means by which you can get not just have the access to see it, but now you don't have to worry about being tracked. You know, some people might say, well, if I pledge for this, then they'll be able to see that I'm pledging for this. But it's like visiting the website just this one time for that portion of documents at least.
Five calls on the line, 212-209-2950. Join those. We only need three more to fill up the phone bank and make sure everybody has a job down there in the tally room. $75, you'll get the entire Cryptome archive on DVD that you can load anywhere. And for $125, you'll get the entire Cryptome DVD collection plus selected talks from the HOPE conferences starting from 1994 and going all the way to 2010, about 25 talks having to do with intelligence issues, some of them by Robert Steele, some of them by legal experts, all of them controversial, educational, enlightening, and that's what we're all about. That's what we've always been all about. And you know, I really hope that you guys are at HOPE number 9 and that we hear something from you too, because, boy, you've got so much to say and so much to share. Now, you must constantly be worried about what might happen next, what kind of new tactic the authorities might take to shut you down or to silence you or just scare you into submission. And I have to wonder, what is it that you find motivating that keeps you standing up when so many other people would not?
Well, I want to, at this point, give credit to the readership of Cryptome and Cartome and their participation in the project, because there's an incredible feedback loop from these people who not only send in material but are also evaluators of what's put up, and there's a constant back and forth and inputs from them that are essential. as soon as there's a faltering, you know, if cryptome is threatened in any way, their response is so extraordinary. And when you say what gives one courage, it's the fact that there's this swarming energy and support mechanism. So it's not at all a top-down dispensing of the 70,000 files. It really is a looping mechanism that is participatory and very variegated. You know, it's not a linear. It's got huge redundancy in it.
It's a wonderful parallel to this place, to WBAI, because that's where we got our power from, too. All these people showing support, being there in case we're in trouble, in case something happens. If authorities, God forbid, try to shut us down someday for saying something controversial on the air or for allowing someone controversial to speak, we think it's impossible. Well, it's not that impossible. It could happen. Laws change all the time. You guys must have seen things change. The whole landscape after 9/11 changed to make things more difficult to publish and to share. So what might have been easy to do back in 1996 could be considerably harder now. You could find yourself facing charges for something that seemed like it was completely acceptable back then. And I guess you have to be constantly vigilant about that.
Well, that's true. And the key here, and Deborah's made the most important point, and we give credit on the DVDs to all the people who've given us this information to publish. All the sensitive stuff came from other people who were willing to take the risk to send it to us. We promised anonymity. They've gotten it. And so that we don't dig this up on our own. They give it to us, and we put it up. And that's the backup, and I know that they do the same thing for you. And so the key here is that not to think of us as the originator of this. We're just the people who run the ship to put it up. And so it's other people's publication, and we say it's their publication. If you want to be identified, we'll identify you, but we say this. The default is no one is named.
Mm-hmm.
But we're always named. We have our home address down. You can find us at any time.
And by the way, it's spelled CRYPTOME.org and Cartome, CARTOME. Now, I have to ask, and I'm sure this is on the minds of many listeners, we've heard a lot about leaks in the last couple of years, leaking sites, and it was a different site, WikiLeaks, that got the vast majority of attention. What would you say is the difference between a site like WikiLeaks and a site like Cryptome?
Well, it's specialized in leaks, and we don't. Leaks is something we do, but the bulk of our work is not leak material, only because we know that leaks is a marketing term, and so that we don't exaggerate what we do, and we don't publicize it, we don't seek publicity, we don't talk about ourselves, we just put documents up. You decide what to call it. And so WikiLeaks set out to be controversial by using the concept of leaks. And that's all they say they do. Well, we do other things besides that. And so we commend them for what they're doing. But we also say that if you only depend upon leaks, you won't get enough information. Because so much of leaks are phony leaks. They're deliberate misleaks, and they will shape public opinion by over-dramatizing it and take you away from more thoughtful and deliberate study. So we think leaks need to be put in a broader understanding of information so you're not inflamed about information, but in fact, learn to think about it. Now, we've noticed that WikiLeaks makes the same message. They talk that way too, and so we concur with that. But their marketing is different from ours. We just don't do marketing. Mm-hmm. Now, they say they do to, in fact, get the information noticed, and they're very good at that. And so if we did more of that, we might be more noticed too. The price for that, though, is then you become more like the mainstream media. And we know the shortcomings of that. So we like the quiet library approach. We like people to inform themselves, decide for themselves, and talk among themselves, and not be told or overstimulated by that. But it's a good approach, though, nonetheless. So we have no complaints against what WikiLeaks is doing, and they have gotten a lot of good attention. A lot of sites have popped up to emulate them, and that's good, because the more leak sites there are, the less likely any particular site will be taken down. So that's a good thing. And, of course, they've given credit to Cryptome for helping them with this idea, or at least Julian has. And so that this helping each other, and we've named several hundred other sources like ours that do the same thing. And so we think that it's important to spread this around so it doesn't seem like one or two people are doing this.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting point, because while WikiLeaks has been around for a few years, you guys have been around for over a decade, and you're consistent. You're always there quietly posting the information that you get. And it's, except for that 12 hours that you were shut down, you have not stopped. You've kept going. And I think that's good. I imagine all the publicity over the last couple of years concerning WikiLeaks and the controversy and all that, was that a help to what you guys do? Did it make things harder?
Well, we spent a lot of time giving interviews about WikiLeaks, mostly people looking for dirt on WikiLeaks. Uh-huh. And they thought that we would provide that. It gave us time to think about how to respond to these inquiries, because we haven't dealt with the media very much, and they bombarded us with inquiries about WikiLeaks. Mostly, though, looking for controversy and tried to foster conflict between us and WikiLeaks.
It's funny that that's what the media focuses on instead of what controversy is actually in the contents of the websites themselves.
Correct.
And there is so much of that that should be focused on. Instead of looking at the collateral murder video and saying who did this, who leaked the information, they should be looking at what's in the video and dealing with the horrors that were perpetuated and captured. But too many people miss that. Too many people just want to find out who's responsible for leaking the information in the first place. And I imagine, you know, you've seen that a lot as well, people just missing the message.
Well, not only that, but they get angry at you if you don't gossip.
Yes.
Because that's what they thrive on, is gossip. Nothing's very deep about this. And so that's what the term leak often does. It's meant to be transitory. Mm-hmm. They were not interested in any deeper story. We tried like hell and they just wouldn't go there.
Okay. I'm sorry. We're just so engrossed in this conversation. I didn't notice the calls have dropped off. We only have two on the line right now. What we're offering, for those just tuning in, we're here with John Young, Deborah Natsios of Cryptome.org and Cartome.org. We're offering an entire archive of Cryptome. It fills up four DVDs filled with data, 70,000 documents, for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950, only available for the next 9 minutes. And for a pledge of $125, you get the entire Cryptome archive and about 25 talks from the Hope conferences dealing with intelligence issues and spies and all kinds of fun things like that, how it relates to the hacker world and the world sort of... I think they balance each other out rather interestingly. Now, John, I know you were around when we were on trial back in 2000, fighting our old enemies, the MPAA, in the first DMCA case in federal court. We keep kind of sharing stories and going fighting the same battles, it seems. So it feels really right that you guys are on the right side of everything here. You can join us by pledging, by showing your support, by keeping us on the air, by keeping freedom of speech alive here in New York City and beyond. 212-209-2950. One call coming in. Let's get another five calls coming in so that we can have a good night tonight. It's essential. Go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to say I think Cryptome is one of the finer examples of the democratic process with a small d, the democratic process of citizens, Americans, looking at what their government is doing, looking at sensitive government documents. This is all open source information for the most part. It's not really classified information, but information that's very hard to define that would not have become available if there were not people like John Young and Deborah Natsios at Cryptome and Cartome storing this information, being the librarians for the curious public who really want to know what their government is doing, and making people start talking about, you know, policy, you know, domestic policy, foreign policy. This is all in this amazing volume of information, 70,000 documents. If you were to print this on paper, this would fill several hundred books in your personal library, but it's on four DVD-ROMs, which you can have in your own possession without worrying about government agencies looking at what IP address was visiting their website by calling 212-209-2950.
Yes.
Thank you, 212-209-2950. And getting a copy of this, it's really part of the democratic process, in my opinion.
It's history.
It is history. It's valuable information. It's not just history. It's from 1996 all the way through January of 2012. This is really
up-to-date current information, but it's important to look at the history and see where we've been, where we are now, and have a huge volume of information that will give you a bird's-eye view of what our government is doing.
And it's not just dry words, too. It's all kinds of other things, pictures and various
sure.
other... So you, it's really, I don't want to say entertaining, but enlightening, something that would not bore you. That's for sure. 212-209-2950. We have three calls on the line now. I'd like to see us go out with about six or seven. Is that too much to ask for? I don't think so.
Eight.
I know. Eight? Someone say eight?
Let's go out with eight.
All right. Well, you know, I know that if anyone else, any other radio station in this city, in this country, is asking for funds, they're not offering something as dynamic as this. I will go head to head with anybody to show us something more controversial. I know, John, you don't really like the word controversial to describe Cryptome, but it is educational, and education equals controversy in too many eyes, unfortunately. This is stuff people need to see, need to know, need to educate themselves about, and need to spread so that other people know what's going on out there. It's vital. Dot red.
Well, in terms of like how controversial it might be, I'd definitely like to echo what was being said earlier about how information in general tends to have, you know, dual usage or more. And so much information that's very important that is invaluable that you'd be less without can be construed to be negative as well. And that's where people start getting this whole controversy thing from. But the service that they provide by continuing to offer these sites for well over a decade is fantastic.
Five calls coming in. Please, another three calls, and we'll have a full switchboard. 212-209-2950. You know, we were talking before the show about how we just keep seeing the same players. We mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, how it's 2600 fighting the MPAA on one issue or another. Back in 2000, it was over DMCA. More recently, it was about SOPA and PIPA and those acts. And Deborah, before the show, you told me something very interesting about our old friend Judge Kaplan, who ruled against us in the DMCA case back in 2000. He's still doing things and doing things in ways that we might object to. What was the most recent thing?
That's right. Dear Judge Lewis Kaplan reared his head once again just last week by handing down a decision to forbid the Occupy folks from doing an action down at the 500 Pearl Street Courthouse over which he presides. So he prevented the public domain use of that public institution and the space in front of it by claiming there was no public space sufficient in front of the courthouse to allow a group demo. So the equation between the public domain in the physical realm as well as public domain in the informational realm came together in an intersection at that point under the robes of his honor.
Incredible. It keeps recurring, and it's all so relevant, so important. Please add your voice to it. We're out of time. 212-209-2950. You still have a couple of minutes to get this amazing premium, a full archive of Cryptome.org, all kinds of information to savor, to share, to learn from. Pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. Pledge of $125 gets you that plus about 25 DVDs of Hope Talks about intelligence and information. Guys, John, Deborah, any last words from you to our listeners?
Please support Off the Hook.
All right. Well, I say please support Cryptome as well. Let's support each other. Let's stay strong and keep freedom in mind all the time. Thanks, everybody, for calling in. Please, you have a couple minutes, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We're not on next week, but we will be back next week. I mean, 2 weeks, the week after that, we'll be back with more information and fun things. 212-209-2950, oth@2600.com is our email address. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Good night.
All righty, all righty. WBAI.